tremendous looking trophy.
Hello and welcome to Platinum Explosion, number one PlayStation podcast in the Oceanias. My name's Dylan Blight and joining me, as always, Ashley Holby.
Dylan, excited to be here when you talk about one of the best, most exciting games of the year.
Yeah, what's that?
You're going to talk about Rise of Ronin, right?
Oh, right, yeah. Yeah. Indeedy. Rise of Ronin. It's a game. And I've played a few hours of it. So, yeah, let's just get right into it. Don't beat around the bush, you know?
Yeah.
Well, hold on. Let me put it this way. What do you think this game is?
It's an action samurai game set in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it. Yeah. From the makers of.
Because it's an interesting one, because it's being pushed as being marketed as like a big PlayStation game, right?
Yes.
It is PlayStation exclusive. However, it's not from PlayStation Studio.
No, it's a Bandai Namco game.
It's from Team Ninja. It's from the people who did like Neo. It also comes off the back of a huge, massive, successful Ghost of Tsushima. A samurai game set in Japan.
Yeah.
However, I would straight away say, if you think this is going to be anything like Ghost of Tsushima, it's not. Like, it's also the thing is, from like outside's perspective, I guess, like when you watch the trailers and stuff, it just like ticks boxes of it's a Japanese samurai game. Okay, so it's probably like Ghost of Tsushima. It is open world, so similar. Mm-hmm. And then there's the other side of like the combat, and it's like, okay, so it's like a Souls-like. It's got Souls-like elements, but it's nothing like Neo. It's nothing like an actual Souls game. You know, so it's a bit more forgiving. It's a bit more forgiving and stuff. Okay. It definitely falls more in line with, I would say, at least based on what I played, like the few hours for the preview period, which, by the way, I only finished last night. I played up to, played right up to the last mission you're allowed to talk about. And like then got into bed and now kind of fine.
That's fine. Everybody loves leaving it to last minute.
Well, I may have prioritized something else, which I'll talk to about after this, which is finishing another game instead. So yeah, but I did that. I will have like a short preview article up. But I mean I just don't feel like this. It's always funny when they do these like preview article things, because it's like, no one really wants to read like a fucking 10 million word thing about like, it's just like, is the game worth looking forward to? Yes. All right, cool. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
I think the standout thing from this, from the get-go, is it's a lot more, and I don't know if they've done a good job at advertising this, it's a lot more like historical, like very grounded, like cutscenes playback with like a narrated voice about like, you know, the year is blah blah blah, Japan, you know, the shogunate, this, the you've got fucking you know, British ships, or you know, like you know, like all these like things that's coming out, which that separates it, I guess, a lot more from Team Ninja's other games, because they're even if you was to compare this with like Neo or whatever, and what was that other one, the monkey one, fuck, I can't remember. Anyway, the any of those sorts of ones, like they all have like fantastical elements with you know, supernatural beings and whatever else in them. So far, none of that, right? So you just like swords for swords sort of stuff. Now, some of the stuff you can do, I feel like, is a little bit unrealistic. But anyway, that's just add a little bit of leeway. But it's definitely like set in a grounded world. And when you run around, I can't remember the first big city you get to. It starts with Y. Anyway, oh my God. But the first big city you get to, even like just running around it, it feels a lot... like it has a very historical sort of flair to it. So I think that helps separate it. And you can even in the pause menu, you can go to like a timeline thing and like see not only like look back what's happened in the story so far to your character, but also it gives you like literally the years when these things happen. And the game even opens with like one of those warnings about, hey, this game like presents characters and people as they were from the year that, you know, they may be offensive now, basically. You know what I mean? Like, so I don't know if that's, I haven't seen anything like, I'm like, I don't know if there's like some racial or like maybe later on, like sort of stuff. I don't know, but there's that I felt was sort of interesting. Story wise, you play as, the game starts, you create two characters. I need to have a list here, but I don't have it. But they call them like something twins, who are like, they're saved when their whole village is attacked by the shogun assassins or whatever. And they run away, and then they're like picked up by this and trained in the way of this like certain samurai or whatever. And then they're like called twin somethings or whatever, and there's a big part about like how as one unit they're inseparable, but like separate they're formidable, but it's like when they're together they're the best. And I'm gonna say this because I'm not sure how much is spoilers or not spoilers or what I'm supposed to say. Something happens and then the characters are separated, and then you pick which one from that point, even though if you were like me, you spent like fucking 20 minutes messing around in the character creator, which has a lot of like customization for some reason for a game like this. But anyway, you can then pick which one of your characters you want to continue playing the game as. And I picked my female character because I made her look like Maki Ito, so which I was very happy about.
Yes, it is freakily accurate.
It isn't it? It's so good. So I'm playing with Maki Ito, which is really good. And I'll say straight away, one of the first things that really annoyed me is I got a new piece of gear and it was a fucking hat and it covered up her hair. And that was like so annoying because I'm like, well, the hair's there.
Do you have the option to turn off?
I think you helmet? Do, but like you have to like go, like you had to unlock it. I think I've got that now or something. I think I've got that now. But at first I was like, motherfucker, I don't know. Like this hat's giving me like plus 15 armor, but it's fucking ruining everything about my style here, but so then they get separated, and then you're basically on a mission to find or track down the other person, be that the sister or brother, depending on which one you choose to play the game as.
Yep.
And then while that you're backed into this, like as I'm saying, this very historical setting for Japan at the time, and what's happening is like everything around you. Prologue is very linear, so you just like sort of play through these like very linear sort of sections and like cutscenes and whatever. And then as soon as you get to the first chapter, then you get into, hey, here's an open world. And I find it really weird is that the open world stuff in this game, especially coming off having played Final Fantasy, where I'll say I don't love the open world stuff and that. I think the key difference is just, again, like the narrative setting and like if it works or whatever else. But this game, I would say nothing that they're doing in the open world is particularly new and fresh. However, something about it for maybe just this type of genre, I'm liking for some reason. Like, because it is literally like, hey, here's a small outpost, right? Go into outpost, kill all the bad guys there. You get like more respect in that region. Like it's pretty basic sort of stuff that you've seen in a lot of games. Hey, here's a shrine. Go up to a shrine, press R1, you do a little pray, you get like plus one skill point. It is pretty standard sort of stuff. But so far, it's not a lot. Like it doesn't, like you open up the world map and you're not like, oh, fuck me, that's a lot. But at the same time, it's just like on my way between main missions, there's been just enough to sidetrack me, if that makes sort of sense. Like it's not overbearing, but it's also pretty basic, but it just works. And I think maybe that the reason is that the game's bare bones, like sort of, hey, here's an outpost, take it down, is because the combat is the thing in the game, right? Everything's built around the combat. And the combat is challenging, but you have difficulty settings, so it is not hack and slash. It is also not get one hit by a motherfucker and then just get steamrolled by every enemy in the game, like it's an actual FromSoft game.
Yes,
yeah, it's somewhere in between. I'm playing on the normal difficulty setting. You do have an easy, a normal, and a hard, but they're not called that, they're called like whatever, something else. But I mean, it took me like 8 tries to beat one of the boss fights or whatever, but, and I'll get to that in a second, but so far, like if you, I think the thing is the combat feels really, really good. And maybe that's why every time I come across an outpost where it's like, hey, take down these 5 enemies, those 5 enemies and the combat is like fun enough that that's like, I want to stop and do it because I get to fight people. And like when you're, usually when you're roaming around the open world, there's not like, you know how Ghost of Tsushima, you just come across like people just marching along the roads, you just like stop and fight them and shit like that. So far, I've seen nothing like that. It's like you're running around, you have a horse, you can call it at any point, which is cool, and you can upgrade the horse and whatever. Everything is customizable. It's crazy. It's like, okay, cool, got new horse armor, but I didn't have to pay for it, so it's not like Elder Scrolls. Then you know, so you roam around on your horse, you don't have to like bump into people, but then it's like you see like a little red dot on the map and you can see a little village there and you're like, fuck yeah, cool, go fight some dudes over there. That's it. I went to fight some little town the other night, and then like each area has like one or two mini bosses with a bit more HP, and this one dude was just kicking my ass, and I was like, nope, and I just like ran away. So like, unlike like, because it's got that open world aspect, it's like you can at a certain point just be like, nah, I'm good. Like, I'm just gonna YOLO the fuck out of here. Combat though is, yeah, so at the start of the game, outside of picking and like customizing and spending half an hour creating a character and doing your hair and everything like that, then you get to pick their classes. I think there's like 6 different classes. It'll change like where their points go, primarily to like one's like higher in strength if they're a straight assassin, sort of typical Ronin character, and then there's like another one that have like more charisma, another one that has like better intelligence, and then 2 of the classes have the same special skill, which is being able to do like multi assassin kills, and then the other 2, one of them, they get an extra skill to like be able to heal more, and another skill, another class gets something where they can unlock like stuff in conversation, dialogue stuff, and there's a fuck ton of dialogue stuff, RPG shit in this game as well, which is weird. So I just went with the typical Ronin class because I was like, oh no, that feels the most sort of just feels like where this game is, as boring as that is, that just,
well,
feels
that's
like
what the name is.
Yeah, I was like, that just feels like what this game should
not be. Rise of Assassin.
No. And it tells you that for each, which one you pick, which weapon classes it suggests for those based on the stats and everything. Technically, you could use whatever weapon you want. It's just that those classes, you will probably be better at those weapons, or there's like a slight boost. So it's like the basic one, you get slight boost to like katanas and shit like that. So pretty just standardized weapons. Whereas some of the other classes have shit like javelins and whatever else. So, but you will find all those weapons still, and you can still use them if you find one that has like a much higher attack than the one you've got. So yeah, combat, it's pretty basic in like the core of it, which is, it's like squares your attack button, triangle is your counter button. They call it counter spark. So like if an enemy attacks you, you press triangle, counter their move. Most of the time, like if an enemy goes to do like a 3-hit combo, you go like triangle, counter, triangle, counter, triangle, counter. You like counter their full combo. They'll sort of get stunned, and then you can like go ham on them, sort of thing. You can circle, dodge, roll out of the way, and then you've got L1 that can also just hold that and block attacks outside of like any typical action game these days. Like the enemy glows red and they're doing an unblockable attack, you know, pretty standard shit. However, the glowing red attacks can be counter spark / countered, but it has to be a perfect like spot on counter, whereas so the other
risk
ones,
reward.
Risk reward. However, if you block those, they're automatically like stunned and you can do a fuck ton of damage. This game, unlike some other Souls like stuff, doesn't have at least a system that I would describe as super confusing. It's like you hit enemies, their health goes down, but then they've also got, and you've got as well, what's called key. Basically translate, just say key stamina, right? It's that you attack, your key goes down. You run, your key goes down. You attack, like you go ham, spam, square, your keys goes down. Suddenly you can't dodge, roll out of the way because you're out of key, right? It's stamina.
Okay.
The enemies, same thing. If you wear down their stamina by the most effective way to do it is either countering their attacks, they'll like deplete that bar on them, or if you hit them with special moves, which you can perform by holding R1 and pressing like triangle or square, if these special attacks hit them, they'll deplete it too. If the key gets depleted, then you can like, they're like stunned basically, you can go ham. So it's like either just like get a bunch of attacks in, or just like counter everything and then just hit them that way. And then eventually they'll glow red and you press triangle and you do like a finishing move. Or if they're a boss, you got to like do a finishing move like 2-3 times, sort of like to get the chunks down in their fights. You can press X to jump. And that does mean that you can, like, at some point I felt like an absolute badass where someone went to, my brain just went like full Matrix mode and someone like went to do a swinging attack. And for whatever reason, I just pressed X without even thinking about it and like jumped over their sword. I was like, oh shit. Like, I'm so used to like trying to just block or parry or it. Dodge. I was like, whoa, I jumped over the sword. Never mind. We're good. But yeah, the combat feels really, really good. You do have the ability, and it gets where I've got up to, it started to get a little bit more in depth too, because when you start the game, it's like there's one style similar to Ghost of Tsushima and Neo as well. From the little bit I played, there is like a style thing in this, which is like you walk up to an enemy and next to like their health bar, when you like lock onto them or enter combat, it'll have an icon with like either like a couple up arrows or in blue, or a couple down arrows in red. So if telling you if the style you're currently in is good or bad against them. You start the game with just one style. It looks like there's 3 or 4 styles in total in the game. You literally just hold R1 and like flick the right analog stick to switch your style mid combat. So it's just that thing of like, obviously I've entered some fights and it's like, well, this style is good against these couple enemies, this style is bad against them. You can still attack and fight enemies, but you're not going to do as much damage is there, so there's that sort of stuff playing out as well. Now where it starts to get rather interesting, I think, is the fact that, and this is where I was saying, so I did a boss battle in a mission. So you got the whole open world segment, you've got the running around doing fights, you've got some open world stuff, typical stuff where it's like you talk to a character, they're like, head to this place on this marker, you kill a bunch of people, cutscene happens, blah blah blah, whatever. Typical sort of stuff. There's been a couple other times where you do like a mission screen before heading on the mission, and you can take an ally with you. Now the allies, it seems you will unlock, and this is the part that I don't know if they've done a good job or have even talked about really in any of the stuff I remember watching, is this game has like a deep social building element with the characters that you meet throughout the game and like choices that you make, how they affect stuff and that they play out with, to the point you can even give your allies like presents and build relationships with them, and like it's got all that sort of stuff. So you meet this one guy and you do a mission with him, and this is so it's like sneak into a place and you can change this ally's gear and tell them and change out what they're doing as they go, and you can also during the mission at any point press L1 and up to switch to that character. Or if your character, your main character that you're playing as, gets downed, you automatically switch to playing as your ally and you're able to continue the fight. And you can also walk up to your downed character and use one of your like health potions to revive them. So that's interesting, because that means that there is also a lot more options whenever you go into any mission. And it also means that weirdly, when I'm taking on a boss in this first thing, I'm like, oh, so like it's not me versus the boss. I've technically got like 2 health bars of like 2 characters to use. But also at this point, the boss was, I didn't have the style that was good against the boss, but the ally did. So like I pretty much just switched to the ally for the entire fight and let my character just be AI controlled for the entire time. So that was weird. Throughout the missions, it's sort of these missions where you like have a loading screen and everything, you're sort of like locked into a particular portion of the map. You can unlock you can even have like a shop at the midway point to restock on gear and stuff like that. So these are like linear, it's weird. So you've got the open world segments and then you've got like these linear sort of missions. Then at the end of this mission, fight this boss, as I said, fought him like 8 times, 9 times, something like that, died a few. At any point, in fact, after getting my ass handed to me like 5 or 6 game times, the game pops up with a menu that said, would you like to switch to easy? I'm like, fuck off. Like, leave me alone. No, I'm going to do it. Just, Jesus Christ, give me time. But it's nice to know that's always sort of an option. You can at any point just knock the difficulty down, I guess, if you're having a problem with the fight, with the boss, and you can switch it back up to normal afterwards, I guess, if you really wanted to. Finally beat him. At the end of this boss fight, I was just expecting would just kill this random goon because I didn't think it would be like anything of notoriety. It gives you the option. You have a lot of dialogue options with this character. I ended up letting him live, even though he was at this point presented to me as a bad guy, I just sort of felt bad to him because he started like whimpering and be like, please don't kill me. I'm like, all right, dude, whatever, fucking little baby. And then the other ally I was with was like, I don't know if you should have let him live. We'll see how that plays out. And then I continue on the game for like another hour. I'm like wandering. I'm like on horseback heading to the next main mission. I see a side mission pop up. I go over to the side mission, like random dude on the side of the road. He's like, oh, hey, there's a dude up the road, like causing trouble, killing my friends. Like, can you help me? I'm like, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, he says he'll give me some money. I go up the road. Turns out the dude up there is the guy who I let live. He's like, I'm not up here causing trouble. These dudes are just like out to get me to kill me. Will you help me or do you want to fight me again? And I was like, no, I believe you, because there's like no dead bodies around or anything. I think you're actually being set up. So I was like, no, I'll help you. So then I team up with the guy I let live. I head back to the guy who just gave me the mission, and me and him kill all the him and his friends. Then he is like, cool, we're friends now. So now he's one of my allies. And then the next mission that I did, where you can bring some allies with you, I got to select to bring you can have a max of two. So I don't know how many allies you'll unlock throughout the whole game, but I brought both old mate from my first mission who fought this dude alongside me, and I brought this motherfucker who I just let live twice now to do the side mission with me. However, if you'd played out all these scenarios differently, you could have been going into this particular mission with just one ally if you'd chosen to kill this dude instead. So that made me think, I don't know how this is going to play out long term, like how the choices and stuff in the world affect you. However, my choices have meant that I've got two people helping me in this next boss fight, which was really good because it was some massive sumo wrestler looking motherfucker, and he was kicking my absolute ass. And it was good to have like basically three lives, because as soon as like I got down to my, like I used up all my health potions, I had both the allies dead. It was just down to me. And I'm like, well, I don't know if I would have beat this dude if I didn't have this other dude here. So yeah, so I don't know, if you want to make the game easier, get as many allies, I guess, is my going away tip from all that. So
yeah,
I don't know, I feel like I've gone on. Any questions or stuff that I've, or tidbits or stuff?
I guess, you know, not a lot there made me think it's not like Ghost of Tsushima, other than you enjoyed the combat more than you did in Ghost of Tsushima.
Yeah, well, the combat's definitely more in line with, I guess, the Souls stuff. And I mean, just quickly, because I forgot to mention it, it does have that typical Souls thing, even that Jedi Survivor does, which is enemy kills you, they've got your experience stuff. Points that you haven't banked yet, you have to get back to them. Hasn't been a huge problem for me most of the time, because even if a random character's killed me, as I said, like you can literally run up there, if I can get experience points back, deal enough damage to for the screen to pop up and say you've got them back, and then be like, YOLO, I'm out of here, bye. Like, you don't keep fighting them. And then boss fights most of the time is just like, it's just like, it says you've lost them, but then you go back and fight them again. It's like, you've got them back, and then you die again. It's like, you've lost them. Like, it's just a continuing.
Yeah.
I think the combat's deeper than Ghost of Tsushima, but Ghost of Tsushima was just going for a more like straight up action game, where this is trying to, I think, meld that line between the Souls audience. It's definitely trying, similar to Jedi Survivor or Jedi whatever, Fallen Order, all those games. It's trying to find an audience of Souls like but more accessible is definitely what I feel like the pitch was, from everything from allies to the a lot more checkpoints, a lot more areas to save the game, a lot more ways you could grind up XP, the allies, like all these things that just go, hey, here's a million ways we can make this game a lot easier for yourself. While also, if you want to just be like a straight up Ronin and choose to do everything by yourself on the hardest difficulty and make the game as hard as fuck because you want to play it that way, there's the option, you know what I mean? So, Yeah, I would say it's definitely not as cinematic either as well.
Again, would be a major difference.
Yeah. Major difference between this and Ghost of Tsushima.
It's not getting Akira Kurosawa.
No, it doesn't have any Kurosawa vibes. It doesn't have like these massive, it doesn't look like it's like visually it's fine. It's definitely not got like, you know,
that is it full? Is there full English and Japanese dubs?
I started the game, I didn't select a language, and it's just all English. So I actually haven't looked to see if there was an option in the settings to switch it to Japanese. So I'm just playing in English. And the English acting's all fine. I don't feel like anything.
No.
I feel like it's that thing of, I think it's correct, where a lot of characters just speak It's like monotone-ish, but I think that's like authentic for the period, if that makes some sort of sense. Like, at least,
who are we to know?
Who are we to know? Based on what I've, you know, seen on Disney Plus, I don't know. Yeah. The exploring the world's also really good when you get a paraglider. That's pretty fun. As we see in the trailer, yeah. You can just like jump off a ledge and just press X and you can glide in. Oh, the other thing I'll quickly say is the game has a lot of stealth, right? So here's another way to make the game easier for yourself. You can stealth through pretty much any area you want. So if you don't want to fight dudes, some enemies you'll have no choice because, like, obviously there's certain areas set up where they're like, no, you, like, there's, you try and stealth around this. Like, you've got to face these enemies. But, like, you can stealth in the grass and, like, what I figured out pretty quickly is if there was, like, an enemy between me and the boss fight that I kept dying to, I didn't want to lose any health to it. But I realized, like, between the checkpoint and the boss, all I did was like jump into the grass, quickly walk over, and then you press L3 to like crouch and L3 to get up. So I just like, as soon as I was like at the edge of that grass, I would just press L3 to have my character like quickly poke its head up, and then quickly press L3 to crouch down enough that the enemy goes, huh? And then it like walks over towards the grass, and then just stealth kill the motherfucker and just go on. So if you want to work out ways to like cheese
stealth, the system,
that's, yeah, go for gold. I'm like, I don't want to lose health fighting this dude on my way to the boss fight. I need all my health, you know, so
yeah. You also mentioned classes with a lot of dialogue options or charisma and that kind of stuff. How much of that plays into the game?
Yeah, so like literally a few times now I've been in conversations with characters and there's been stuff where like 2 out of 3 or, you know, like 2 out of 4 of the options have been stuff I can't select because it's like you don't have this charisma skill unlocked or like ways to, you know, like, so I went to this mission, one last mission that I did, you go to these people, they're like guards there. They're like, hey, you look suspicious. And we've been told to some suspicious motherfuckers, what are you doing? And then like the only option I could select was like, I'm going to fight you, basically. The other two options were like need high charisma, which was to, you know, make up some bullshit story that would have worked. And I think another one was like to say you could pay them off or something like that. None of those things were available for me. So when you get skill points, so as you kill enemies, you get XP. You bank the XP every time you get to a checkpoint. Checkpoints are these like poles around the world. And as I said, don't worry too much about checkpoints. There's enough. Like, I feel like
Japan is just filled with poles.
Poles with flags, abundance, right? You're good. So, but yeah, if you bank that, and if you've got enough to form a skill point when you checkpoint, you'll get a skill point. There are multiple types of skill points though, which is where and I still haven't quite figured my head around it. So it's like in your strength selection thing, it's like some of the skills you can use straight up just basic skill points, like normal skill points you'll get from leveling up to unlock those skills. Some of the other ones you need a strength skill point. And from what I've gathered, the only way to get strength skill points is by performing actions that are deemed under the strength tree. It's like fighting people. And then like the charisma skill tree and the dexterity skill tree and stuff. Again, some of those you can just unlock with normal skill points, but then others you need to do stuff that are in those tree. And it's also like you get better with weapons the more you use a type of particular weapon. I mean, there's a lot here to the point that I definitely feel like the few hours I've played the game, I haven't like fully understood how all of these systems work.
Just scratch the surface.
Yeah. But I was highly surprised with the amount of dialogue option stuff that was happening in the game going into it, given the developer and everything. And then also just the fact that the game seems to be heavily leaning into your bonds with people and having so much to do with building those bonds. Like you'll meet a character, and if that, you'll know that character is probably important because you'll do a quest for them or a side quest or have a little conversation with them. And then suddenly it goes to this whole fancy menu where it pops up with their character picture and says like bond created, you know, like it's persona or some shit like that. And then you can have a whole menu where it tells you your bonds and how they're building. And then, yeah, early into the game, in the first city, you unlock like a base, basically. And then whenever you go in there, any allies that you've unlocked are in there, and you have the ability to talk to them, learn more about them, which can build your relationship with them, and it'll say like increase relationship. You can give them presents. If you give them presents that are things that they like, they'll get more points. Like there's a lot of that like sort of very JRPG persona, Danganronpa, like like building relationships with people. I don't know if I can date people yet. We'll find out. Like we're just, I feel like there has to be, at this stage with the amount of like bond creation stuff, there has to be a point where I can date a character in this game. If not, I'll be shocked. So, yeah, you came for this or?
Yeah, very keen. So, gotta find time to finish the game that I'm playing. To get before starting this one.
Yeah, I'm at the moment. It's that thing of like I honestly feel like for some people, like if you struggle with Souls-like games, then I think easy would be like normal for some other games. Mm. But I would say even for yourself, just start on normal and then see how you go. Yeah. And if you hate it, just drop it down.
I mean, from the sound of it, it sounds maybe God of War like, but with the stamina bar, I think is the thing that really sticks it apart. You know, because God of War's like Souls light.
Yeah,
it's just adding that stamina bar element.
Yeah. And there's that thing of like, if you, the second you start, like, I mean, when I started the game and just coming off Final Fantasy, I think I just started like spamming to do attacks, but then you quickly just get your ass handed to yourself. And you're like, well, I gotta slow.
You gotta be patient. Like,
And like, from what I've found, that basically go into a fight, lock on, like, stand there, wait for the enemy to attack you first. Either block it or counter it or roll out of the way, something, and then attack them. Don't just run in and go like crazy, as tempting as that is, because that's usually they'll just block you and then like take 3/4 of your health off. You're like, cool.
Yeah.
That was great. So, really good though. So, yeah, keen to play more and see how it goes. Be interesting as well in co-op, because that was there was no co-op as an option for the preview period or whatever else. I haven't seen anyone talk about it, and I don't know, because it's not something that's been covered. But the game does have co-op, and it basically works in that, from what I could gather, like any of the missions you could do in co-op, not the open world stuff. So like any of those ones locked in with allies, where you go into a particular areas, you could call for someone to help you or join a friend and do those. But they're the ones where I've struggled with the boss fights. It's not really the open world stuff. It's like being those locked in, more linear mission stuff. So see how that is as well. All right, I finished Final Fantasy.
Whoa.
40 hours, I think. Was my
okay.
Yeah. So I really rushed it.
Yeah, you barely did anything.
Hell, did anything. 40 hours. Just such a rushful game.
When you take the 10, 20 hours of Queen's Blood out, you know, that's 20 hours to get through the game. So
I think that's, I think I've done all the Queen's Blood. I don't know, maybe I missed it. I assume I've missed some people, but any city I went into, new town, it's like, okay, run around, do all the Queen's Blood matches, and all right, moving on. So where's the next story mission? That's what I need to do now. So.
Yeah.
Without spoilers, I think the game is really, really good. I think it jumps a shark completely in the last couple chapters. I think what I'll put it this way, as a fan of the original game, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is the thing, for people who haven't played the original, you maybe have different thoughts and stuff like that. I think the direction this has been heading since the ending of Remake. And the ending of Remake, of course, again, I'm not doing spoiler warnings for the ending of Remake. That's off the table at this stage for this podcast. The second they started bringing like the whispers of fate and changing of...
But I mean, that wasn't even the ending. It was like all the way through the remake.
Well, the whole game, yeah. But like at the end where you like the boss is literally like the fucking harbinger of fate or some thing like that or whatever. And you like kill it and then it's like implied that you're potentially changing the fate of the universe or whatever. You've known that this is going to go down a different direction.
Different way.
This is coming into this game. I think what this rebirth adds, the best stuff it adds to the Final Fantasy VII universe, is the characters are a lot better in this, like seeing them talk to each other, seeing them expand upon. I mean, it's so funny having now finished it and hearing Kieran say, like, Red 13 doesn't get enough, like, character building. Totally does. Just he hasn't got to it. Every single character in this game gets time gets something, gets like a moment. Even like the fact that Kate Sith gets fucking more story in this than
is that how you pronounce it? They finally said his name.
Yeah, they said his name, and I paid attention. So, I would say Vincent Valentine and Sid are probably the only two characters who don't get a lot of time, but that's because they sort of show up in the last like sort of back end of the game.
They're like the Red 13s of this game.
Pretty much, yeah. So third game for them, but everyone else that's sort of early on, it's like the amount they add, and in particular the amount they add to I think Tifa, Aerith, and Cloud, like those three, which in the first game was presented primarily as like this weird love triangle. Mm-hmm. The way that those characters played out, and the way that Aerith and Tifa just get much more of a like their like friendship is so much more solidified in this. Like all of that stuff, I think, just makes, especially as again, as someone who loves these characters from watching them as pixel little fucks wandering out of PS1 screen through to seeing them come to life in PSP games, PS2 games, future Advent Children. This is probably the best representation of all of these characters. What I think this game loses, or this remake trilogy has lost, and I've especially solidified my thoughts in this having now finished this, is its direction into the whole like Threads of Fate storyline, and like what can you change fate and everything else that they've been going in since remake. I think like the focus on that means that a lot of the stuff from the original game around the ecological messages of the game aren't lost entirely, but are put into second place. And I think that's the only thing that sort of disappoints me. Because the first game, you know, is literally just, it's like you're literally eco-terrorists, you know, like that's Avalanche and everything starts up. But then the second, all this fate stuff, and then, yeah, especially in the back end of this game, it's like, we're not spending so much time talking about the future of the planet as we are weird shit that's been added, that, you know, without getting into it. So I'd say that's my only like negative. But even with that, I think it's a really, really good. I think the combat's been nothing but improved with the synergy stuff. Like you have to use that. I probably wasn't using it as much as I needed to. And then once you get to the last few boss fights, which I was saying on the IKCAP the other day, I was got my ass handed to me by one particular boss fight. Like the back end of this game, the boss fights get harder than the boss fights in the first game. And you have to be using those ally, like those synergy moves correctly and making sure to use them, or else I think you're just going to fucking get your ass handed to you. Even to the point, there was a stage I forgot where, like, if you get down to yourself, like if your two allies are down, and then you bring up the synergy menu and you can do synergy attacks with the people on the back line, I'm like, oh yeah, I completely forgot the game told me about that like 15 hours, 20 hours ago, whatever it was. I was like, oh yeah, cool, I can just use Aris healing fucking synergy attack even though she's not in my party at the moment. Yep, forgot about that, never mind. Yeah, so really, really good. I have no idea how they're going to wrap up this trilogy. It's left in such a weird place, I would say, for what they're doing. The third game is going to be interesting, I think. So that's where I will leave my Final Fantasy thoughts.
So you're on the disappointed by the ending side of history of the discourse?
I wouldn't say I'm disappointed. But it didn't. It didn't hit me as emotionally as I think the game thought it was. It didn't leave me disappointed. I think my brain was trying to focus and work too much on just understanding what the fuck I'm witnessing and trying to piece together what any and all of it means, that it, because of that, and it doesn't allow you to get emotionally invested. If you know what I mean, like I can't just sit there and be into the characters when the last couple hours I'm just going,
what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, hey, what the fuck's going on? And then trying to piece it together and be like, well, I think this means this, and then I think that's what they're trying to say with that. And then you're like, and then the last cutscene is playing out, and even I'm sitting there, and you know, it is an emotional ending. It was supposed to be an emotional ending, setting up towards the third game, and you know, like a real, like, man, we're going into the final act sort of way the game ends. And I'm sitting there just going, man, like, I think, I don't know. Reddit might be able to tell me though. I don't know.
Like, yeah. Do you think you'll resonate more with a bit of distance and, you know,
maybe even
reliving it or something? Yeah.
Distance or seeing it wrap up, like maybe in retrospect after the third game, can be like, oh, this all makes, yeah, this was all, the journey was worth it, sort of thing. But
yeah,
at the moment, I'm just like, I don't know. This is just, it's a lot of wild shit you're adding into. Is also that element where I just go, the story was already good. Like, did we need
all this?
Do we need all this like stuff when the story was already so good that people for years have loved and been asking for a straight remake? You know, yeah. And then you add in all this shit, which I honestly can't say if I like or not, because at the moment I'm just so confused.
Because you're because you're halfway through the story. Yeah, that's all.
So I don't know. I only have one news story to quickly cover, just because it's like sad, but also kind of like, yep, cool. Press Start writes, yeah, Deviation Games, the studio which started up in 2021 with the goal of creating a new PlayStation exclusive AAA IP, is shutting down. When it was first introduced to the world, Deviation reportedly had over 100 developers working on its unnamed project, including veteran Call of Duty developers Jason Blundell and Dave Anthony, and had the backing of Sony Interactive Entertainment to boot. But it's now the latest in a long line of closures and mass layoffs in the industry. The studio's chief HR and operations officer, Christy Stoll, broke the unfortunate news in a heartfelt LinkedIn post, writing, quote, "It's with a heavy heart that we announce the closure of Deviation Games. I want to express my deepest gratitude to our entire team. Thank you for all your hard work, dedication, and contributions to Deviation. I'm incredibly grateful for the opportunity to have worked with each and every one of you. The entire video game industry will be hosting a networking event. We would love for any/all companies, studios hiring to participate. Please reach out to Berkeley if you're interested in attending, blah, 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 blah." It's wild to me that they, like, so that's like 3 years of working on something. They kept setting them up. PlayStation introduced them like they were going to be putting out like the next Call of Duty, and it was basically going to be a PlayStation exclusive, you know, like, yep, that's what everyone presumed. Like, we've hired the Call of Duty people, like, especially Jason Blundell. Like, he's I think the most known name out of two of them. It's like, we've hired the Call of Duty people to make a AAA game. And everyone assumed it was going to be a first-person shooter based on those
facts. On the pedigree, yeah.
On the pedigree. And then obviously being a PlayStation exclusive, it was like, okay, maybe this could work out good for them. And then, you know, 3 years later, here we are, they're closing down.
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's disappointing. It's very sad for the workers. I mean, I think it's you just question what happened, I guess, because you don't buy a company on a whim. You know, I'm sure when they went to buy Deviation, they were like, oh, they've got a game that's, you know, going to be a success. They've got something here that, you know, we need to make sure we own them, you know, because they're going to put out hits into the future. And then for things to, whether it's just them going, you know, live service games or not, you know, we need to push back because the player base is not super intimate anymore, or development didn't go in the direction they thought it was going to go, or costs were just, you know, going up exponentially on the game or something like that. Yeah, I mean, you know, I'm sure probably in the next 6 months or so we'll learn details about what the game was from various sources and that kind of thing. But yeah, obviously very disappointed. And probably, you know, this is probably why you don't buy studios before they put out a game. Would be my only comment.
Yeah.
You know? Because if PlayStation hadn't bought Deviation, then, you know, even if they cancelled this game, they may have been able to, like, spin something else up. Or, you know, that kind of thing. But yeah, obviously, with them purchasing the company and them not releasing whatever project they're working on, they've kind of had no choice but to, well, I guess they had a choice, but the smartest decision was to shut them down.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, we're going to record What Do You Want to Watch After This, just to to date everything and to pull behind the curtain. But old mate who did his speech about what's his name? Colin? No.
Cole Jefferson? American,
yeah, his thing about like relating to the movie industry, you know, instead of making one $200 million movie, make, you know, like 30, 40, 4 million or whatever he said. Like obviously very relevant to the movie industry and totally agree. But also I think with everything happening in the games industry, I think that's like such a relevant quote as well.
Well, I think the games industry does, like, obviously PlayStation invest a lot in indie games and that kind of stuff, and that's them doing $10 million games or equivalent, like smaller titles, like but yeah, obviously with their first party studios, they want big AAA experiences that are going to be the $200 million projects. But maybe they, you know, maybe they do need to let them do smaller projects, do Spider-Man Miles Morales or, you know, titles like that, you know.
Because I'm just like, I don't understand how this is this was a good use of anyone's time. I'm sorry, I cannot see like spending this many years working on stuff to never release anything. Like, I cannot imagine. Like,
I mean, it's tricky because, you know, game development is so difficult because, you know, you can work on something for a long time and then you get to the end of it and you're like, this isn't good or fun or, you know, this isn't something that we feel people are going to want to buy, you know. And then the costs keep going up, whereas with a movie you can just kind of, you know, you just cut your losses, I guess. Well, much easier, and it's like the money's already spent.
You put the Coyote movie in the jail, you burn the Batman.
Well, most other people would just put it straight to VOD or something like that, you know, or sell it to Netflix. Not everybody can do tax write-offs, but yeah, I don't know. Is it better to release a bad game or to release or not release a game? It's a hard question.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's a tough one. Is it better to release a game like Golem or to not release that game at all?
Well, is it better to release Golem or just they've never made Golem? You know what I mean?
that's a much easier decision. Like, and it involves a lot more time travel than, you know.
I mean, I don't know. And then day they made some money, right? So.
Yeah, I guess. But what damage have they done to the studio and, you know, all the people involved?
I don't know. King Kong came out a couple months later. That fixed it, I think. So.
Did move the attention away?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm not sure it did. Golem was still the first game that came to mind when I wanted to bring up this example. So.
True. Good point. All right. That'll do it. When is Rise of Ronin out? I keep forgetting.
21st of March, I want to say.
21st of March.
Yeah.
Google says, yeah, 22nd. So
22nd, close. An
American date, I guess. Cool. Should have more thoughts again next week. Well, not next week. The week after, I guess, probably. I assume.
Yep, once your bargo breaks.
Yeah, well, I assume the bargo.
When you've actually played more of the game as well. Not just the 2 hours that you bare minimum that you need to play.
So comes out 22nd, so full thoughts 27th, I guess. Yeah. Something like that. I'll have a little preview up probably by the time this episode's out tomorrow. I'm just gonna write up something quickly. But I mean, also if you listen to this, you've probably got more expansive thoughts than I've put on the article.
Then you're right.
Click on the article just to give that ad revenue, you know what I mean?
Yeah, please.
Give the website hit, so. Need the clicks. That'd be good. All right. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Platinum Explosion. Of course, any comments, questions, concerns, thoughts you've had about it, anything else, you can tweet at us, explosionnetwork.com/Twitter. Join our Discord, explosionnetwork.com/Discord. If you want to give me your hot takes on Final Fantasy, which I know like Michael had and he mentioned that Discord, just feel free to DM me on Twitter or Discord, whatever. Wherever you've got me, if you want to give me your hot thoughts, I'm down for the hot takes now. I won't be able to talk hot takes with Astral Kieran for ages, so feel free to give me yours. explosionhammer.com/discord. I can't remember if I said that. If you want to support the show, other than clicking on the website and giving that ad revenue clicks, if you might, you know, don't have ad blocker on or set it for off for our website, what I'm saying. But if you want to do that, you can. There's another way. Ko-fi, explosionhammer.com/support. Head on over there, drop a dollar or more. Be greatly supported. It's appreciated. It's appreciated. And until next week, remember, every trophy counts.